Man, we're off and rolling again, as Bob Ferguson says, with another edition of Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams, a podcast each week where we look at some of the stories that at least I've been noticing and maybe you have been too. Helping us is Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News and Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, guys.
Hello.
John, how are you?
Are we shocked that the religious tolerance law, what did I say?
You said intolerance, but
continues to make news this week, Eric. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, there's all kinds of knucklehead laws or brilliant laws across the country, but this one has really caught fire.
I saw Steve in the halls, and he apologized to me for last week for dismissing my argument that this was going to be a huge story. He thought it was going to blow over. But
I did. I missed it. I did.
It's really gone wild, and I think that, you know, obviously, they've changed the law in Indiana. The governor in Arkansas asked that the law be amended before he signed it. And I think there's going to be a rethinking of some of these laws in other states that are anti-gay and endorse discrimination. And I think that you're going to see a broadening of civil rights statutes across the country because of this.
What's interesting to me is we've always seen sort of the push on social issues come from the right or come from the religious, right? The churches have been involved in those things. And this was a business decision. I mean, this was Walmart coming in. This were other businesses having their say and really, in the end, having the impact.
Well, that's okay, too, right? I mean, it's a marketplace of ideas. Whatever you want to do, whoever wants to speak up can speak up, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not good or not. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm just saying it's a shift.
There was a column this morning in the Tribune by John McCarron, and he was warning the people on the left not to get too triumphant about this, not to push this too hard in the faces of those who are now losing this battle because there could be a backlash. I don't necessarily agree with John about this, but I want to throw that out to you guys. You think this is too far, too fast, and that there's going to be a backlash across the country?
What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think it's, you know, I'm interested in seeing now this idea that, you know, this sort of religious exemption or whatever, these laws in many states were used to what sort of to, nah, I'm having trouble with my words, but they've used in ways that I think would have been widely defended in the past. The Indian American kid who'd been ordered to cut his hair, and he went to court and said, look, this is my religion, I need to keep my hair. He won under a similar law.
Right.
And these sorts of laws have been part of our fabric in many ways.
Right. I mean, the basic idea behind them 25 years ago or so, in the early 90s when they were first getting started, was that people had religious expressions such as, you know, wearing a hijab. It was a way of defending somebody's personal liberties. And it goes back even further to the case where the American Indian group wanted to smoke peyote in their part of their.
That was sort of the start of the federal law, right?
Yes, and so it was all about sort of the individual practice of religion and the customs and things that are associated with that, and how the law can accommodate those. And it has transformed, and was clearly transformed in the Indiana case, to laws that were designed to enable discrimination against groups of people.
So I wonder if the pushback will be beyond what traditionally most of us might have defended.
I think there will be pushback, and frankly, I think there should be. I said to my audience this week, okay, all of you lily liberal lefties who are feeling really good about yourself, remember the principle here is, though, that there should be a separation between church and state. And let's not lose sight of that. You may not like this version of how that's going down. You don't see this as a true religious belief. It's not Christian enough. It's discriminatory, whatever. But there is a population of people who really do feel that the state is imposing something on their religious expression, and they don't like it. We don't like this interpretation of that, maybe, on the left, but there's something to that, and we need to remember that. The next time somebody comes down and says, hey, the state is stepping on the church, we need to be open to that.
The fundamental principle of these civil rights laws that extend civil rights is that we create special classes of people that we say you cannot discriminate against. Now, you can discriminate against someone who wears a baseball hat into your restaurant. You say, I don't serve people who wear baseball hats. People who wear baseball hats are not a legally protected class. The argument we're really having here is not about religion, but it's about what classes of people should be protected. We all agree, everyone in this country agrees that there are some classes of people that deserve protection from discrimination laws, and African Americans is the one, first one.
But we should also agree that if you run a hardware store, you don't have to do business with anybody you don't want to.
Well, that's not true.
But you do.
Oh, that's not true.
But you
not
don't.
Not at all. No, John, you're wrong about that. If an African American walks in and says, "I want to buy a screwdriver," and you say, "I'm not going to sell it to you," and the reason is because he's black, that's against the law.
I didn't say that, but I said that businesses ought to be able to do business with whom they want, when and how they want.
No, that's not true. They shouldn't be in business if they
talk to business owners and ask them if they don't feel like they ought to be able to control the sales, the purchasing, the business of their hardware store.
Well, that's too bad, because the law has for a long time insisted that they treat people who come in.
So if I, as a white male, walk in and just say, "Hey, listen, I want you to sell me a wrench," and they don't want to, they have to sell me the wrench?
Yes.
I'm not a protected class.
No,
I'm a middle-aged white male.
Race is a protected class, though.
So they could not reject you based on your race, John.
They could say, "Well, we're not going to serve you because you're a radio talk show host, and host people." They
no,
could
but
do
that's
that.
My point. That's exactly my point. So the business should be able to, at least to some degree, determine how it runs its business. Right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, you're right about that. And that's why you can say that a Jewish Orthodox bakery can't be forced to bake cakes with swastikas on it for Hitler's birthday by a Nazi group, because Nazis' political philosophy is not a protected class.
So you know what they should do when they do stuff like this? If you don't want to cater the gay wedding with your pizzas, tell them you're busy that day.
Now, have you heard about what's going on with that restaurant now in Indiana?
I have. Now, today is Friday. It's April, what is it, 3rd? Holy Friday, or Good Friday. But, Steve, just so by way of reference, the numbers will change by the time you finish the sentence. But tell people where.
Well, the owner, one of the co-owners, was interviewed on TV very early on.
Memories Pizza in Indiana.
And they said, you know, we often serve gays in our restaurant, but if we were asked to cater a gay wedding, we would, based on this religious freedom law, say no. And the reaction against this restaurant just went nationwide and huge. I guess there was a golf coach who was fired for a tweet where he said he'd like to burn the restaurant down or something to that effect.
They shut down for a day
I think they've shut down for more than that. The restaurant's actually closed now, temporarily. And so this GoFundMe or some other website.
It's a GoFundMe, yeah.
They started a website to raise money for this restaurant, and as of this morning, Friday morning, they say they've raised $500,000.
They were at, what was it? They, after 17 hours, were at about $250,000, and shortly after a full day of GoFundMe, they're at $500,000. They should never open again.
I was going to say, you know, I call square dances sometimes on the side. I should announce that I will refuse to call a square dance for gay people, and then maybe I could get $500,000.
But to your point, Eric, about, well, will there be a backlash? I think that's it. That's just evidence of how there is another group on the other side, and you may not agree with them, but they're there.
No, I know. I think that you were right. There will be a backlash, but I think that the interesting thing about this whole gay rights thing is that it is generational, that you have kids growing up now for whom this prejudice against gay people is just—they're baffled by it as much as anything. Like, what is the big deal, you know? And I think that is what's happening. That's why this is not like some other social issues that people talk about that do go back and forth, you know, like abortion, affirmative action, things like that, where you see people changing their point of view and public opinion shifting. This is one that's just kind of—it's a tide, and it's moving that direction. And, you know, I believe the Supreme Court's going to okay gay marriage this summer, and I think in 15, 20 years we're going to look back at this and go, what was the big deal? That's, you know.
Speaking of religion, let's talk for a little bit about the HBO movie Going Clear. It's the one that talks about Scientology. Eric, you saw it at the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri this winter, and I just saw it a couple of nights ago on HBO. You can watch it anytime, but it hit this past weekend. Holy cow, what a movie.
Unbelievably good, yes.
It's long. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes, which in America is really long. But it's the first half of the movie tells you how L. Ron Hubbard came to be. You know, he was a Pulp Fiction writer. He wrote sci-fi stuff. He was Isaac Asimov light. He was good enough at it. Then he wrote this Dianetics book, and it was his look at psychology and how people behave. And while it was a bestseller on the New York Times list, it was a sensation. The Psychology Associations of America rather dismissed it. It faded. He wanted to find a way to keep his fame and money, And so he then created this church based principally on what he wrote about in the book. And that's the first half of the movie. The second half is how dark, evil, mean, and sinister this church is. And their fight with the IRS, which was a fascinating part of it, they would have been bankrupt and gone away, except that the IRS said, okay, you are a religion. One last point about the movie. The creepiest, scariest part is the depiction of, wait for it, Tom Cruise. Eric, what were your thoughts on
this? I was going to say, I have not seen the movie, but I was going to guess Tom Cruise.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tom Cruise has not come off well. And the thing that, about this is that, yeah, it's this philosophy that is rooted in this story, that this origin story of the Earth and of human beings that L. Ron Hubbard told, and that I guess you only find out about when you've reached a certain level in Scientology. It is a, you know, otherwise it's sort of a self-help, self-actualizing movement,
right.
All of which is fine, but there is the mind control, the person control kind of element to it, the cult elements of it that keep people in the religion and make it very difficult for them to leave, and the way they attack people who leave the religion, and so on. And the question that you bring up is whether it qualifies as a religion and ought to be tax exempt for those reasons. And I think that is a serious question, and one that was engaged a while back, and the IRS just folded. And the movie makes the point that the IRS folded because Scientology went after individuals within the IRS comprehensively across the country, and was threatening all kinds of filing all kinds of lawsuits and was dogging them.
They had hundreds of suits against the IRS through the IRS, right. And they said, here's the deal. We'll take all these off the table. They go away tonight if you make us tax exempt. Right. And that's kind of the deal they brokered.
But what's happening to Scientology is that the internet is slowly killing it. And this is one of the arguments made in the movie, which is that people who used to be, you'd get like a pamphlet, you'd hear about it, and you wouldn't be able to really investigate it. So you'd go to a meeting, you'd read, and you'd get sort of sucked into it. Now people get a pamphlet, they go on to Google, they search for Scientology, they read about all the controversy, and they think, I don't think so. So their numbers are dwindling. And so that the internet may take care of what the IRS did not.
I will say this, though. The movie would have been better. You know, they show an arena like the United Center, Steve. They show a basketball NBA-size arena filled with people, all at this kind of rally, and the Nazi-ish trappings are upsetting. But I think most of these people aren't John Travolta. Most of these people aren't Tom Cruise or the henchmen of the church. Most of them are people who want to have joy in their life and, you know, be self-actualized. And the church, the movie doesn't acknowledge that at all. You know, it's not interested in the good that it must be doing for a lot of people, like all faiths are essentially good for most people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one of the interesting things about this movie is how many of the former Scientologists are interviewed for it. People who are formerly high up in the organization who are very concerned about it. So,
well, one last point about that. I think it's telling, though, that they say what Scientology does is it just crushes you if you try and leave the fold. Well, the guy who makes the movie, Scientology, a couple days later, puts out a really slick, well-produced, three-minute-long video on the internet about how they're denouncing the film. That's fair enough. But because it's Scientology, it's not good enough to say we disagree with your interpretation of our faith. Their rebuttal includes horrible accusations about the filmmaker's father. You know, they dug up the dirt on him just to sort of punish him. And they literally say in their piece, evidently the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Well, John, you know what that's about. That's not about getting at the filmmaker. That's about discouraging the next filmmaker.
Yeah,
next
maybe
journalist
so.
Wants
maybe
to get
so.
Him, like, you know, that's what it's about.
What is the general attitude about the lesbian Ohio couple who's, this is hard to believe it happened, but it did, whose baby, you know, one of the women got artificially inseminated. She picked out somebody from a pamphlet. She wanted donor number 330. The donor number was handwritten on a form, and instead she got donor 380. And instead of a white baby, she had a mixed-race baby. The case has moved to DuPage County. It was a ploy by the fertility clinic, figuring that they might get a more conservative settlement or judgment there. What do you guys make of that story?
Well, my quick take is that if you take race out of this and just say it was the wrong, they got the wrong thing, that they ordered A and they got B, they've got a case. Then you add the racial element, and it makes these women look pretty bad.
Shouldn't be in it, right? I mean, if it's wrong, it's wrong.
Yeah, well, but in making the case about why it's bad for them, you're right, Steve, race shouldn't even be part of this. But they said, we, you know, are in a small Ohio white town.
Oh, that's right. We're going to, the kid's going to be picked on. And
oh,
right.
Yeah. We don't even know how to braid their hair. So it's literally one of the problems we're going to have raising a mixed race
right.
child.
I'm sorry. I wasn't up to speed on that. Right. And this is the lesbian couple raising a boy in this small town where he'd be picked on for being
so
black.
They've moved because they, you know, it's, everybody in this story does the wrong thing. You know, the fertility clinic screws up. The women, however unfortunate their circumstance, made it worse. And by the way, I'm not even sure it's unfortunate. It's a lovely baby with lovely colored skin that a lot of people would love to have, whatever. But I mean, those two women are... When this kid learns to read someday, is going to say, really? So you guys sued over my birth?
Yeah. Nobody looks particularly good here. They have a claim because they were, like I said, they ordered A and they got B, and they deserve to be made whole for that. But, you know, the racial element is unfortunate here for the child particularly.
Or the kid's going to say, wait a minute, so I'm going to graduate from college without student loans because you guys sued? Way to go.
Yeah. High five, moms.
Nice job.
Or because I can check the minority box. You know, I don't have many all-black couples, but I have several mixed-race couples where one's black, one's white. And the burden that their children carry, this is just me watching from the sidelines, doesn't seem to be onerous. They don't talk about it much. It seems like in this day and age, Eric, you said we'll look back and the gay thing is is odd in 15 or 20 years. I think being of mixed race these days is not that much of a burden, said a middle-aged white man, you know?
Yeah, who lives in a major metropolitan area, too. So,
yeah,
I mean, there is that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Look at the images in media. Look at the people on TV or in commercials. How many of the young people are of mixed race or appear to be?
Oh, lots.
I think it's hip.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing then. Something that you're reading, hearing, or watching that you'd like to pass along as a recommendation this week. I'll go first. I just finished Better Call Saul, and I did not like that series the first few episodes. I was expecting something a little more Breaking Bad-ish, and it's just an odd little sad sack story about this attorney who obviously later surfaces in Breaking Bad. But Better Call Saul turned out to be a really good first season. If you haven't watched it yet, I'm recommending that.
My recommendation is Dead Wake, the new book from Eric Larson.
Yeah.
I'm about halfway through. And
I'm reading that too, Steve.
Coming up on the 100th anniversary of the sinking.
Of Lusitania,
Of the Lusitania, right, I should say. And so he just has a way, you know, because it's a daunting book when you sit down. You're like, really? Am I going to read 350 pages? You know, but he has a way of crafting it and writing it in such a way that just brings you along so well. So he's such a great writer, and it's a wonderful story.
You know, he has the gift of being able to tell with suspense a story. You know how it's going to end.
And he does it time and again.
Well, now how about you, Eric?
Mine is a brazen suck-up. I am endorsing Timbre.com, T-I-M-B-R-E. Or I think they say it Timbre, Timbre.com. And it is a review site for podcasts. You know, podcasting is this medium. We're indulging in it right now. We're participating in it. It's this burgeoning medium. And this is the only site that I know of that actually reviews podcasts and reviews podcast episodes. And it's a very useful thing if you just want to dip your toe into podcasts. It's a great place to go. And maybe they'll mention the Mincing Rascals at some point.
I'm not sure I'm ready to send this to them, but I sure do appreciate you guys visiting with us. Let's do it again next week, okay?
You bet.
Thanks, John.